According to hauntedplacestogo.com, one of the spirits that is present is that of a broken-hearted and spiteful Melissa. A letter was discovered that indicated that she lived near the cave for quite some time in the mid-1800s. Melissa fell in love with a man. He was named Mr. Beverly and acted as her tutor. Unfortunately, the tutor did not seem to feel the same way that she did. Instead, he fell in love with her neighbor and friend. It is believed that she intentionally led this individual on a tour of the cave and then left him behind. Because he was not familiar with the passageways, he was unable to find a way out and died. Today, many claim that Melissa still visits the cave as a spirit, and that the man is still trying to find his way out. Specific information about this letter was not provided in this article, which was in fact a fake story. Many eerie stories have been shared over the years that were merely fictional tales, embellished by the rumors of its hauntings. But despite there being several fake stories that have been shared over the years, don't let that discourage you from the other stories, as those were all true accounts. You are listening to episode Grand, Gloomy, and Peculiar, Haunted Mammoth Cave National Park. I am your host, Carrie, and this is Unlocking the Paranormal. I do want to add a quick disclaimer that a large part of the information used in today's episode was retrieved from the National Park Service's .gov website, as well as the Smithsonian, in a book written by Colleen O'Connor Olson and Charles Hannon. Before we continue on with the many paranormal sightings, I want to briefly touch on the prehistory and discuss the early history of this cave, as it is as dark and ominous as the ghostly encounters themselves. Long before this limestone labyrinth existed, prehistoric seas covered this area that is now known as South Central Kentucky. According to the Mystery Syndicate, during the Mississippian period, which was 358.9 to 323.2 million years ago, and the Pennsylvanian period, which was 323.2 to 298.9 million years ago, warm, shallow seas covered the area. When they dried up, they left behind the limestone. Passages began to form around 10 million BCE, with rainwaters that dissolved the limestone, and large passages formed about 1 million BCE. According to an online article titled, "This Cave in Kentucky Has a Dark History That's Incredible and Bizarre," by Jen Shockley, it is estimated the first humanoids to take shelter in this cave dates back to the days of the Mastodon, around 12,000 years ago. According to this same article, petroglyphs, pottery, archaic tools, mummified and skeletal remains have been found. Jen Shockley also adds that 2,100-year-old pictograph was discovered in the cave. Explorers believe that natives only went about 20 miles into the caves and took shelter mostly during harsh weather. There is a history of the cave being bought and sold prior to being dubbed Mammoth Cave, but the history begins to really take shape in 1812. The cave was provided as fruitful during the War of 1812, when enslaved African Americans were sent to mine saltpeter, which was used to make gunpowder to aid in the war. Then, in 1813, while mining in the cave, miners unearthed something they least expected. A mummy, now known as Fawn Hoof. Fawn Hoof was discovered, wrapped in deerskin and accompanied by various tools and dressing ornaments. One of them being a necklace made of young deer hooves. Found 10 feet below the surface, this body was placed in a sitting position, surrounded by stone rocks that built a stone casket. The body found in pristine condition fascinated many and was one of the reasons she was put on display. After the war, the saltpeter market collapsed, but by this time, news had spread about the cave mining and mummy being placed on display, and that piqued the curiosity of many. Mammoth Cave had built a reputation as being an underground marvel. Travelers from other states and other countries journeyed to Kentucky to see it as early as year 1816. The same enslaved miners that were sent there for mining purposes became the first tour guides of the caves. After spending countless hours learning the cave system and being the first to build the trails, they were the best men for the job. Stephen Bishop is one of the more notable and famous explorers in the history of Mammoth Cave. According to National Park Diaries, Stephen was the first person to cross the bottomless pit in 1838. The bottomless pit is a wide, deep crevice that was formed by erosion from water dripping from the ceiling to the bottom. The pit is reportedly 105 feet deep with a 6-foot gap. I can't even imagine how frightening it would have been to place a ladder across the large, deep opening and crawl across it with only light from an oil lamp. But if Stephen would have never have done this, we don't know how long it would have been before that leap would have been made. This courageous act led to Stephen discovering unmapped areas of the cave system, as well as discovering blind cave fish. He also found the underground rivers and created a map of the cave off of memory. People came to Mammoth Cave because they wanted to get a tour specifically from him. Along with Stephen Bishop, another notable name involved with providing cave tours were the Bransford family and Alfred Croghan. Each enslaved guide eventually saw their freedom, and today they are not thought of as slaves but as legends and important figures of Mammoth Cave history. When people began touring the caves, they discovered more than just the geological wonders that were hidden inside. This is when a mummified corpse was found. It was estimated to be about 1,000 years old. Four other mummies were then discovered and put on display for tourists to view, with a small fee, of course. People were cashing in on displaying these remains. Even when they had sold off the remains, people would still flock to the cave to view them, not knowing they were no longer there. Tourists exploring the caves would use their torches and oil lamps to smoke their names into the limestone. I will post an image example on our Instagram page for you to take a look if you would like. As news continued to spread about the cave, it became intertwined with one man's quest in 1839. Dr. John Croghan dabbled in various enterprises, and one of them was to improve trail access to the cave, and the other, a more health care focused. According to the National Park Service website, it was this year that Dr. John Croghan purchased the cave for $10,000 and turned the cave into a tuberculosis sanatorium. He heard stories about how those that toured the caves felt so refreshed after they left, and how Animals did not decay while inside. He thought, the caves would make a great place for those suffering from TB. He himself suffered from the disease, and not a lot was known at the time about tuberculosis. He invited and, more or less, convinced 16 patients to join him in the caves. They stayed within a series of buildings, including 2 stone cabins and 8 wooden structures, about 12 by 18 feet. All the while this was happening, tours of the cave continued. Tourists would pass by the TB camps and would be in close proximity to the patients. According to National Park diaries, a hotel was developed on site, which then further amplified this as a tourist destination. According to an article by Jersey Griggs in an online blog called The Scariest Ghost Stories from U.S. National Parks, 5 patients of Dr. Krogan died in his care. They were then laid out on a slab of stone that is now known as Corpse Rock. As it turned out, the conditions of the cave made fighting TB more challenging. The cave was unventilated and damp, and patients would breathe in the smoke that filled the chambers from the oil lanterns used to light them. These conditions made breathing more difficult. After the failed experiment, Dr. Krogan returned to the surface with the remaining survivors. The wood huts were dismantled, but the 2 stone structures remain to this day. If you would like to see photos of the huts, I will be posting them on our Facebook and Instagram accounts. Or, if you are feeling adventurous and in need of a vacation, you can go to Kentucky and take a tour of the caves and see them in person. According to Jen Shockley in her online article, there is an on-site cemetery that is the final resting place of some of these patients. John Krogan then passed away with tuberculosis in 1849. His cousin then managed the cave after his passing, but then left several years later. Then, on June 15, 1859, a famous tour guide, Stephen Bishop, passed away at a young 37 years old. It was after his passing that entered the Kentucky Cave Wars. According to National Park diaries, a man named George Morrison entered the picture in 1922. He purchased all the land right next to or near Mammoth Cave. He was hungry for profit, and cave tourism was lucrative at the time. He managed to create a new entrance to Mammoth Cave. He was then able to advertise Mammoth Cave tours, which was the cave everyone was flocking to see. George and other cave owners in the area played dirty to get tourists to their cave instead of Mammoth Cave. They put up signs, had fake police and information stations, where they employed people to lie to redirect tourism from the real Mammoth Cave to their own. This dirty fight for tourist and profit turned deadly. A notable death is that of Floyd Collins in 1925. According to the National Park Service website, Floyd Collins was known for mapping and exploring the cave system. His family owned a show cave called the Great Crystal Cave. Despite cave tourism being popular at this time, visitation to his family cave was low, as the cave's location was off the main road. So, he made an attempt to find a cave that was closer to the main road. He decided to explore his neighbor's cave, known as Sand Cave. During his attempt of mapping the cave system in a section of unexplored area, he found himself trapped in a tight crawl space after his foot dislodged a 27-pound rock, which wedged his ankle in place. Rescuers attempted to free him for over 2 weeks. By the 18th day, they finally reached him, but tragically, he had passed away. The cause of death was due to exposure, exhaustion, and starvation. It was determined that he had died just over 24 hours earlier. His body was originally sealed inside Sand Cave, but was then removed for a formal burial. He now rests in the Mammoth Cave Baptist Church Cemetery. The story of Floyd became national news. During the rescue attempt, many flocked to the area. The tragedy did not stop people from cashing in on tragedy. Vendors set up in the area, selling food, drinks, and souvenirs. This greedy fight for cave development and to gain access to Mammoth Cave from other various points would come to an end. On May 25th, 1926, Calvin Coolidge signed the bill authorizing Mammoth Cave as a national park. It would be several years before the park was fully established, and several more before the fight over tourism and cave development would recede. It wasn't until after the cave was established a national park that the main focus went from profit to preservation. According to Only in Your State, in 1990, the cave was recognized as a national wonder of the U.S. If you plan to tour the cave, you must keep in mind that before you can reach the entrance, you must first descend a steep hill past the many layers of rock. Today, there is a grand stairway with 68 concrete steps that guides visitors into the dark depths below. The limestone cave is dark, damp, and the air turns frigid. According to the National Park Service website, Mammoth Cave sits in south-central part of the state of Kentucky. It is the longest known cave system in the world. There are over 425 miles of explored passageways, and on the surface, there are over 53,000 acres of forest, rivers, and streams. This makes for a prime spot for families to enjoy activities such as hiking, camping, canoeing, among other things. During peak seasons, more than 4,000 people visit and tour the caves daily. That is daily. This is on my bucket list, as you can enjoy long and challenging hikes or short hikes. In an article by Only in Your State, they write that a variety of tours are offered, ranging from 2 to 6 hours in length. Noted popular sites are Frozen Niagara, Fat Man's Misery, and Grand Avenue. Frozen Niagara can be described as downward hanging flowstone that forms curtain-like sheaves along ledges, better known as draperies. Fat Man's Misery is described by the U.S. National Park Service website as, quote, a winding keyhole-shaped passageway. The lower part of the passageway is about as wide as your hips, or a little wider. Above your hips, the passage widens to about 5.5 feet or more. At the very end, the floor comes up 2 feet for a 20-foot stoop walk. This is one of the most asked about and popular passages in the cave. According to an online article by Doc Lou Allen for US Today, a new shark species was discovered on October 11th of 2023. It was discovered when the shark's petal-shaped teeth were found in the cave's wall and ceiling. Geologists, paleontologists, and park volunteers have been working inside of the cave to collect fossils since 2019. But what about this cave system attracts the paranormal? How does this all tie in? And exactly how haunted is Mammoth Cave? According to National Parks Traveler, there have been over 150 documented paranormal events. These paranormal experiences have been witnessed by rangers, scientists, and visitors. If you think about it, this cave has been the location of the last moments of people's lives. It has been a burial site and is formed with limestone. Before getting into all of the paranormal sightings, I first want to briefly touch on the significance of limestone. According to the stone theory, which was first introduced in the 1970s, limestone has the ability to absorb and release electromagnetic and psychic energies. When the energy is released, residual hauntings can occur. If you want to read up more on this theory, you should check out the book Limestone and Its Paranormal Properties by Timothy Yohe. Now, finally, getting to the part you all have been eager to hear. The paranormal sightings. A large part of these sightings I will speak on, I got from the book Scary Stories of Mammoth Cave, written by Colleen O'Connor Olson and Charles Hannon. This book shares numerous stories of first-hand accounts of paranormal encounters within Mammoth Cave. As written in the book, caver Candace Leake was moving through the rough, rocky section of unknown Crystal Cave as to explore and learn as she was taking a cave class. While in this section of the cave, she tripped and began to fall, and below her was a 5-foot-deep canyon. The thoughts that instantly crossed her mind were, well, I'm going to be breaking some bones, and this is going to hurt. But suddenly, she felt a strong hand grab her upper right arm. She managed to regain her balance. She turned around and said, "Thank you, Richard," who was another caver with her at the time. But no one was there. Richard was on the other side of the passage. She wonders if Floyd saved her. She did utter a quick, "Thank you, Floyd," and left the cave unharmed. Now, sit back and enjoy as I give you a ghostly tour of Mammoth Cave. The first stop on this tour, Methodist Church. As you hike along a huge passage called Main Cave, you might see old wooden water pipes, beams, and other various tools that were used during the saltpeter mining. The eerie sight as it appears the miners just up and left, as if they went on lunch break but never returned. This is an area where miners reportedly use the area for church services, giving the room its name, the Methodist Church. Now, during the so-called historic tours, blackouts are popular. One guide turns out the lights while the other guide speaks to the visitors on the opposite side of the room, sometimes by lantern light. Cave guide Larry Purcell was walking from the tour group to the light switch one day when he saw a family in the cave. The cave was now lit by the lard oil lamp. And about halfway to the light switch, he noticed a black family standing 10 to 20 feet to the rear of the group. There was a man, his wife, and a son and a daughter. They were all wearing black and white apparel. The father also wore a white Panama hat. He didn't really recall such a family at the gate, but he wasn't paying that close of attention. He thought that They were from the Caribbean area and perhaps did not speak English. He altered his path a little so that he might invite them to join the group. He got within just a few feet of them, close enough to see facial details. When about to speak, he noticed that they were very intently watching the other guide. So, he veered back towards the light switch, not wanting to spoil their experience. As he got to the light switch, Gary, the other guide, asked for the lights. As I pushed the on button, the family just disappeared. He searched the entire group as they passed by him. Oddly enough, not a single black person was on the trip. The family he had gotten within feet of had simply vanished. While the tour had ended, he had asked his fellow tour guide if he had noticed a family on the tour, and he said no. I did not notice a family on the tour. Just so happened that someone overheard this comment and simply quipped, "Well, that was one of the old slave guides and his family." Thinking more about his experience, he pondered if his family had joined him, and this was back in the mid-1800s, the family would have stood back away from the rest of the group, as it would have been required by the custom of the day. Perhaps this was their residual haunting. Now, you will learn that the church is quite a popular area for paranormal encounters. A cave guide named Joy Lyons reported an experience of her own. During the blackout portion of the tour, she suddenly felt a very strong, firm push on her right shoulder. It was like a playful shove, and it was hard enough that she had to step forward to catch her balance. She muttered, "Cut it out," because she thought it was another tour guide messing with her. But she could clearly see that David was silhouetted to the right of the group. He had walked up in the darkness and was standing by the other tour guide. Joy felt slightly panicked and was also upset. She committed the sin of the tour by turning on her flashlight and flashing it everywhere. There was no one behind her, beside her, in front of her. It all happened within seconds. There really was no time for anyone to have gone very far from her if someone had pushed her. Knowing full well that it wasn't someone living, at least, that pushed her, she did get the feeling that perhaps someone was trying to get her attention. Now, another report from a National Park Service guide comes from Carrie Woods, who also had a very similar experience while at the church. She was amongst the first tour to enter the cave. She was standing at the light switch and heard footsteps coming towards her. She ignored it, but it kept creeping closer. Then, she was shoved, and her too, on her right shoulder. She quickly glanced back and no one was there. At least, no one she could see. Now, as you collect yourself and gather your thoughts, come along with me as we continue down the windy passage to a small dark passage called Little Bat Avenue, which intersects with a huge brightly lit Audubon Avenue. A tour guide, Neela Spradlin, tells of her accounts when they arrived at the section between Little Bat and Audubon. She was standing at the light switch. The guide had her turn off the lights. She kept her hand on top of the switch. And then suddenly, she felt a touch. It was enough to move her hand. It was not a bat. To her, it felt like another hand. Quickly, she shined her flashlight all around, but the remaining members of the group were at least 5 feet ahead of her, and no one was behind her or beside her. And again, at this same exact light switch, but on a different tour, guide Jamie Gray had a very similar experience to Neela. While standing by the light switch, she was anticipating to hear the key phrase to hit the lights, when all of a sudden, a hand reached and grabbed her left forearm. She immediately flicked on the light, and no one was anywhere near her. Now, as we continue along this rugged maze, we'll come to a huge room called Chief City. It was here that a National Park Service tour guide, Charles Hannon, experienced something strange. During one of the Violet City Lantern tours, a tourist approached him and asked, "Who is that up there among the rocks?" He was slightly worried that maybe somebody had gotten off trail, although a large pile of rocks made it very hard to steer, of course. He looked where the lady had pointed along with another guide, and to their surprise, somebody was actually standing up on Sacrifice Rock. They couldn't make out many details, but it looked like somebody with a long-sleeve shirt, probably white in color, wearing a hat, sort of the old droopy-style hat that some of the early slave guides had worn, and it also looked that the person appeared to be holding a lantern. They thought that perhaps the torch that had been thrown up on the rock had perhaps created a series of shadows. The only thing is that whatever they were seeing was dimensional looking. They could see it from 3 different angles, like you would see an actual person. They did have a good laugh about it and simply went on with the rest of the trip. It wasn't until the following trip that he really began to question what or who he was seeing. He was asked by another tourist, "Have you ever had people in this part of the cave who shouldn't be here?" Confused by what she was talking about, she continued on that people who are from another time or place. Previously, they hadn't been talking about ghosts or any other paranormal things, encounters on the trip. She was very spooked for the rest of her trip. She did claim to be a psychic, so that might had something to do with it. Spooked by her experience, she was very eager to leave the cave. Now, as we continue along with our lanterns in the Violet City tour, eventually we will find ourselves at Mummy Ledge, where a tour guide named Lyman Cutliffe and Grover Campbell discovered something quite interesting. Now, listeners, if you are curious about these intriguing names, this area has quite the backstory to how it was named that gave the room its name in 1935. Lyman would explore the caves, and he did so since he was very young. Knowing full well that a mummy was discovered in Salt's Cave, he and Grover Campbell started to poke around. They decided if there was one in Salt's Cave, there might be one in Mammoth Cave. During his search, he discovered some mummified bats. They crawled around this boulder, and Grover Campbell put his hand down. Feeling around, it felt quite odd. Unsure of what he was touching exactly, he proclaimed, "What is that?" He moved back, and that is when Lyman Cutliffe looked at him and said, "Well, Grover, that's what we've been looking for. That's a mummy's head. After their discovery, they felt it was safe and better to stay in the cave to guard it at night. While in the cave, they decided to look around. They went to a passage called Blue Springs Branch. Grover decided to boldly and courageously put his hand down another hole and was digging around. And that is when they heard three knocks. Grover was frightened, and that is when Lyman said, "Let me put my hand down there." Again, three knocks. And then again, three more knocks. Like somebody hit a rock on another rock. Frightened, they went back to where the mummy was. They were never really able to explain it. But it seemed like if anything had happened to either one of them, it was always in a series of three. Oddly enough, Grover died 3 years later. And then, again, 3 years after that, Lyman lost his job. And then, 30 years later, his daughter had open-heart surgery, and then died within 3 years. He felt like perhaps bothering the mummy had cursed him. He felt like that is what had caused all the problems he had had. He often would mutter, if he had to do it all over again, that he never would. Now, these last two accounts that I will share are slightly different from the rest. Tour guide Sarah Flowers reported seeing a ghost of a fellow guide, Kathy Prophet. The only thing is, Kathy Prophet was very much alive. Sarah was in a cave room called Great Relief Hall, waiting for people on the historic tour to pop out of the appropriately named passage, Fat Man's Misery, when she saw her partner Kathy come out of the hole. She knew everyone had arrived, so she turned out the lights in Fat Man's Misery. Just a few minutes later, Kathy stepped out of the dark passage, flashlight in hand. This was quite surprising, as Sarah, along with several others, thought she was already there. Sarah couldn't quite explain it, because no one else was wearing an outfit that resembled a Park Service uniform. Perhaps her eyes were playing tricks on her? Now, you might think that once you reach the surface and plunge yourself into the bright, warm light of the sun, that it makes you safe. Well, this last story proves that perhaps the spirits roam beyond the entry of the cave. On an afternoon, two park employees were walking across the footbridge to the hotel when they both saw something quite strange. Two sets of legs from just above the knee down, walking over the grassy bank. Startled, they both stopped dead in their tracks. "Did you see that?" she said. "Two of them, right?" "Yeah." They shrugged it off and continued on, thinking to themselves that perhaps they just witnessed some kind of weird and eerie, explainable shadow. Now that we have explored the legends of this labyrinth underworld, with a history as deep and as dark as its cavernous depths, it is up to you to make up your mind on what you believe. I, for one, am certain that the echoes of the past continue to resonate within the ancient caverns, and this is most definitely a bucket list travel location for me. I do thank you for embarking on this chilling journey to unlocking the paranormal mysteries of the world. For a full list of episode source material, head over to the Unlocking the Paranormal Podcast Facebook page. And for additional content, be sure to follow us on Instagram and TikTok at Unlocking the Paranormal. Be sure you never miss a moment of the unearthly tales that await by subscribing to our show wherever you get your podcasts. This podcast is independently produced, and sharing it with friends, family, and your favorite coworkers does help immensely. Don't forget to leave a review wherever you get your podcasts. If you would like to join in and become a paranormal pen pal, to have your story shared on a ParaPals episode, email us your story at unlockingtheparanormalpod@gmail.com. Stay tuned for our next episode, where we will venture further into the realms of the paranormal. Until next time, stay curious, embark on the journey, and may you find the key to unlocking the paranormal.